Okay, today we're going to start our learning together of Parshat Chukat. We're going to spend at least, Bezrat Hashem, two times in the Midrashah learning about some of the underlying themes of Parshat Chukat together. For the first one, we're going to do what we often do, which is kind of take the bigger, larger look at the overarching themes of the Parsha, as is contained in the title, as is contained in the first topic, in the first word. We'll go through that. So in that sense, where does Parshat Chukat open up? What's the opening topic of Parshat Chukat? Paraduma.
Good. Parshat Chukat. First thing is para aduma.
Now, what is the function of para aduma? What does para aduma do? Louder.
Purifies.
But it purifies from something very specific. It's matar from tumat mit. It purifies someone from death. If somebody has the impurity of death on them, the way in which they purify is through the process, the seemingly odd process, the complicated process, the process of paraduma that's laid out in the beginning of this parsha. Now there are two questions that immediately arise with the fact that we open up Parshat Chukat with paraduma. Question number one is, thinking of the narrative of Sefer Midbar, looking at that narrative as a whole of the Sefer, what is Chukat doing here? What is paraduma doing here? We go back to the Parshiot of Bamidbar and Naso, the rise of the individual. Every individual needs a makom. We create an encampment around the Mishkan. We're ready to travel as Klal Yisrael. We start to travel in Parshat Baalotcha. Things start to go downhill. We struggle with the Kadosh Baruch Hu in Parshat Baalotcha. Things explode in Parshat Shlach with Chet HaMeraglim. Then they explode between Klal Yisrael and the leadership of Moshe and Aaron in Chukat. And now, we take a nice commercial break for paraduma. What's paraduma doing here? What is the, like, it's just thematically, topically, conceptually, it's so different than the story of the journey of Bnei Yisrael through the desert. What's paraduma doing here? Not only is it odd in the context of the narrative of Sefer Bamidbar, but on top of that, we actually do have a place where it would belong. There's a great place! A great place to put paraduma. Those who were previously in the Midrashah last year, where might you put the topic of paraduma, of being metaher from tumat meit? You could just pick a book. Louder. Vayikra. Those who were here last semester when we learned Sefer Vayikra together, the whole underlying theme of Sefer Vayikra, the whole goal of Sefer Vayikra, as we saw that turning point that set the stage for the whole Sefer in Parshat Shmini. To create a reality of being able to distinguish between Tum'ah and Tahara, between Kodesh and Chol, and then progressively, stage by stage, over the course of all of Sefer Vayikra from Shmini on, we're identifying Tum'ah, we're identifying Tahara, we're identifying Kodesh, we're identifying Chol, and we're defining what they are, how they function. And what's the Avi Avot HaTum'ah? What's the greatest level of tumah that exists? Tumat meit. So much so that when we were talking in the context of Sefer Vayikra, we had to borrow paraduma. We had to borrow chukat. Just to understand what tumah was. Because if you want to understand tumah, you want to look at the avi avot tumah. It's the granddaddy tumah. Right? It's the greatest tumah that there is. It's the avi avot tumah. All tumah stems from that. And to understand what tumah is, you have to understand the source and the root and the greatest level of tumah, which is that all tumah relates to death. So we studied that concept there because we needed it. So you know what? Where should we put paraduma? Put it in Sefer Vayikra. That's where it belongs. And the Torah says no. Not only am I not going to put it in Sefer Vayikra, I'm going to go out of my way, says the Torah, to put it right here as the opening of Parshat Chukat, because it needs to be here. It's even more important to me, says the Torah, that Haraduma be the opening of Parsha Chukah, that it exists somehow here in the center of Sefer Bamidbar, then it appear in its obvious choice, which is to be in Sefer Vayikra. So it's not just why does it open with Chukat, why does it open with Paraduma? This is so essential that the Torah goes out of its way to bring Paraduma here because it needs to be here. So if it needs to be here, let's understand why does it need to be here. What else is happening in this parasha? Let's do what we haven't done, unfortunately, in a while. And let's go through the parasha. What else is happening in Parashat Chukat? We start with the whole long paragraph of Paraduma. What's next? Take a look inside. Hopefully all of you have chumashim, because it is a chumash shir, the thing. Right? Open up your chumash. Take a look inside. Look at the psukim. Look like we always do at the paragraph breaks. If you want to cheat and look at the shoulder captions, you can. Though, as we saw when we did this in Shir Kali, they were not always helpful, particularly in this parsha. But take a look at the paragraphs and see what's the content of the paragraphs. What happens next? Louder? Good. We have Mitat Miriam. The death of Miriam. What's the story that comes after the death of Miriam? Good. I like your first definition. Just calling it what it is, which is Mei Merivah. Now, what happens in Mei Merivah that's incredibly significant that we'll have to unpack and we will likely unpack next year? What happens at Mei Merivah? Moshe sins. Let's leave it at that. We're not totally clear what the nature of that sin is. That becomes a whole topic in and of itself, and we're going to explore one approach, hopefully on Wednesday, specifically that of the Malbim, because he gives more of, like we do in this year, a more global approach that sets the stage for a lot more of history, gives a clue for a lot of history to fall into. So let's leave aside the nature of the sin. But Moshe and Aaron, or Moshe seems to sin, but Moshe and Aaron are both then told that they're not going to enter Israel. What comes after Mei Merivah? No. Did that in Chirkali also. Somebody did it in Chirkali also, yeah. What happens next? What happens next? What's the next big paragraph? Where do we want to go that we don't go? Louder. Edom. We try to go through Edom, the land of Edom, and we're unable to pass the land of Edom, and God says, don't go to war with Edom. We're going to go around Edom instead. A lack of confrontation with Edom. It's a verbal confrontation. We try to go through and we fail, and they tell us not to go, and they're going to come out to war, but we go around and we circumvent Edom. What's next? Big story, what? Yeah, good. We talked to Aaron. I missed another issue. Good. Then we have the death of Aaron. Aaron, in a very glorious way, goes up to the mountaintop and brings his son Elazar with him. And as he passes away, he gets to see his son take over as the Kohen Gadol. And we see Mitat Aaron, the death of Aaron. Next. Now I get back to the types of juicy stories that we expect from Sefer Midbar, unfortunately. What happens next? Keep going forward. In that actual paragraph, what's happening? Complaining, and what defines this story? If we were to give it, what? What's the defining? There's something that happened. There's one part of the story that appears by no other story where we can complain. Excellent. The Nachash Nechoshet. That we go and we complain as we are wont to do about water, about the man, about food. And then these serpents come out and start to attack us. God tells Moshe to put up this huge serpent, this copper serpent, right? This staff with a serpent around it that comes from this parasha as a symbol of healing. That's still used today in the Jewish and in the secular world, right? As a symbol of healing, that the Jewish people had to look up at this Nachash Nechoshet, this copper Nachash, and this copper serpent, and that was how they would be healed. So we have the Nachash Nechoshet story, and then we close out the parsha with, a little bit more generically, but let's give it one overarching topic, which is how they're often referred to, the two of them together. Who do we battle and who do we beat?
Sichon and Og.
And once again, especially in Parsha Sefer Midbar, we have this multifaceted, complicated Parsha that not only is it difficult to figure out how all of these pieces fit together, Paraduma, Mitat Miriam, Meimriva, Edom, Mitat Aaron, Nachash Achoshet, and Sichon and Og, but also how to fit all of that under this concept of Chukat and Paraduma. That's it. No, I'm kidding. Okay, so let's figure it out, okay? How does this all fit together? How does this all fit together? What did we say Para Aduma comes to do? What is it coming to accomplish? Purify from? Tumat Meit specifically. And if we think about it from that perspective, then it's coming to Metaher from Tumat Meit, from impurity due to contact with death. That word becomes very key. Because death, mitah, actually does very much string itself through this parasha. Immediately following the introduction of Para Aduma, what's the next thing to happen? Miriam dies. We experience one of the most tragic deaths over the story of Chumash. Miriam dies. Miriam, who's led us with Moshe and Aaron all the way back since say, for the beginning of Sefer Shemot. Miriam dies. And now what we call the next one Meimriva, what happens at Meimriva? What's the conclusion of Meimriva? Moshe and who else? Moshe and Aaron are both told, you are going to die. You're not going to enter the land. There's a gzirat mitah on Moshe and Aaron. In one fell swoop, we don't often think about it like that. In one fell swoop, we lose all three of our leaders. Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. The gezirat mitah comes at Meimriva, skipping over Edom for a moment, and then we experience the death of Aharon. We have mitat Aharon, he actually dies, we see his death. So the concept of Para Aduma and being mitaher from Tumat Meit, going from being an odd opening to this parsha, seems to very clearly hang very heavily over this parsha. As the parsha seems to have the specter of death hanging over it. The death of Miriam, the gezerah of the death of Aaron and Moshe, then the actual death of Aaron. As an aside, we'll connect these things perhaps more deeply as we go along, depending on our time. But also, the Nachash Nechoshet, where there are many from Bnei Yisrael who do die, even within our own camp. Sichon and Og dealing with death on the battlefield. Death is very, very much a part of this parsha. But everything that we've described pales in comparison to what we're about to see next. You ready? Take a look at the last pasuk of the parsha. The concluding pasuk of Parshat Chukat, which seems benign, but is everything but. The last pasuk reads as follows. After we've conquered Sichon and Og, Vayisu b'nei Yisrael chavel vayachanu be'arvot Moav me'ever li'arden Yericho. They go and they travel to the plains of Moab across the Jordan from Yericho. What's significant about this particular location of Arvot Moab Me'ever Liarden Yericho? What's significant about this location? Think about it. People, especially if you weren't in Shirkali over the summer, think about it. What does this sound like? Why does this sound so familiar? What's significant about this location? That's where they were camped right before they went into Eretz Yisrael, says Margalit. We've now come to the destination, our final destination of where we are until we go into Eretz Yisrael. What's crazy about that? In the white space between Parshat Korach and Parshat Chukat, you know what happened? 38 years passed! Without even mentioning it! We're told we're going to wander in the desert for 40 years! And a lot of stuff happens! But evidently nothing worth recording! And not only that, the Torah doesn't even bother to tell us that! We just suddenly arrive at the end of Parshat Chukat! Oh, we're here! We've arrived! water for the rest of Bamidbar and certainly for the 37 days of Parsha of Sefer Devarim. We've arrived! The journey's over! I hope you weren't expecting an exciting journey because it's done! We talked about it, we built up to it in the first few parshiyot, it happened for a while, but over. We got a little bit of the first year, and now we're already in the 39th year. And everything that happens in this parsha is in the 39th year. And we cut out those 38 middle years. It's an incredible thing, only Torah can produce that. It's like, yeah, by the way, yeah. It's like, FYI, we're at the end. Doesn't even mention it. Now, why that's significant in our context is that means that not only in the white space between Parshat Chukat, between Parshat Korach and Parshat Chukat, we fast forward 38 years, by default, something else happens also. I won't jump again, I promise. Right? Something else happens also. If we fast forward 38 years, what happened over the course of those 38 years? The whole generation died. The whole generation died. Because at the end of Parshat Shlach, at the end of Chet HaMeraglim, we were told that the generation that sinned would not go into Eretz Yisrael. And so if we fast forwarded 38 years from Chukat to Korach, that means that we fast forwarded from one generation to the other. We've left the door Yotzei Mitzrayim behind, the generation that left Egypt behind, and now we've fast forwarded to a whole new generation. So it's not even just as though that were not enough. It's not just Miriam, it's not just Aaron, it's not just Moshe. It's the whole generation. And the introduction to that is Parah Aduma. Because this whole parsha is dealing with the reality of death. And it's called Parshat Chukat. Because to a certain extent, death itself remains a chok. We don't know what comes beyond on the other side. We don't know what happens after the veil of death is lifted. We don't know. There's an essence of chok to it inherently. But it goes even deeper than that, because it's not just about death. I'll ask the same question again, and we'll keep asking it again and again and again as we add layers and layers to it. What is the purpose of Parah Aduma? Not Tumat Meat, but to be Metaher from Tumat Meat. Why is Parah Aduma put here? Why is it the introduction to this Parsha? Bnei Israel, at this point, have just lost everything. A generation that was promised that they would walk into Eretz Yisrael and live there eternally has just finished 40 years of dying out. Their reality is a reality of death, a reality of mitah. And the question hangs over them. Is there escape from death? Can we move past death? Is there any coming back from death? I didn't mention this in the Shir Kali over the summer. Something I think I must have noticed after. I don't remember if I mentioned it in a later Shir what it was, but like I remember when it hit me and it was just so powerful. That if you look back, and it's tragic, it's painful. If you look back with me to the last time we hear Bnei Yisrael speak, you can correct me if I'm wrong, I believe this is the case. I think this is the last time that Bnei Yisrael speak, that the generation of Yotzei Mitzrayim speak. After Korach, after the plague that follows Korach, listen to the way that they speak. A little bit earlier on, a few prakim earlier in Parshat Korach, at the very end of Perek Yud Zayin. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Chav Zayin. Vayomer Bnei Yisrael, there's context, but there's almost no context. These psukim, they exist in a vacuum. There's a parshat Ptucha beforehand, there's a parshat Ptuma after it. These two psukim almost exist in a vacuum, and it's the last thing that we hear this generation say, and it just hurts. Vayomer Bnei Yisrael El Moshe Lemor. Bnei Yisrael come to Moshe and say, Hein Gavanu Avadnu Kulanu Avadnu. Behold, we perish. We're lost. We're all lost. Kol ha-karev ha-karev el-mishkan Hashem yamut. Ha'im tamnu ligvoa. Everyone who approaches to come close to Mishkan Hashem dies. Will we ever stop dying? End scene. As far as I know, I mean, again, I haven't combed through it again. I don't think that they ever speak again until we see them, the new generation in Parshat Chukat. That's the last thing that generation says, because they're a generation that all they know is that they're going to die out. And they leave us in a reality where all we know is that there's death. And they even think coming close to Kedusha, coming close to Mishkan, it's all death. What is there? Can we come back from that? Is there any way back? Such a powerful question is that question. Such an integral question is that question. That the Torah says, I'm not going to deal with Parah Aduma earlier, I'm going to have a Parah Aduma here. Parah Aduma, which makes a promise that there is Tahara from Tum'at Meit. Tum'at Meit is not the end. There is a way to come back. Impossible as it may seem to be able to come back from a reality of death, there's still life. There's still life there. There's still an ability to move forward. That there are times where even as a nation, we get to a point where we have a certain perspective. And that certain perspective can be so ingrained within us. And we talked about that both in Shlach and in Korach, which I think are two sides of the same coin. A broken perspective, ben adon l'makom, and a broken perspective, ben adon l'chaveiro. A broken perspective in our relationship with God, where we saw the pasuk from Sefer Devarim, which says, "B'sinat Hashem otanu hotzianu me'aretz Mitzrayim." They thought that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took them out because He hated them. Where they go and attack Moshe and Aaron, they came out of Eretz Mitzrayim. They came out of Eretz Mitzrayim, and it took them until Kriyat Yam Suf till we get to the pasuk that we say every day in Pesukei Zimra, where they finally get to a place where they have both sides of the equation. Vayaminu be Hashem Uve Moshe Avdo. And we watch the breakdown in Shlach and Korach. There's no longer a faithful relationship with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. B'sinat Hashem otanu hotzianu Mitzrayim. There's no longer a faithful relationship with Moshe and Aaron. They come and attack Moshe. Where that corrupted perspective, that corrupted worldview, there's no way out of it. What's the way out? Answers that question. The way out takes 38 years. The way out is that there's an ability for a new generation to rise, a new generation to come forth with its own new perspective and its own new worldview, that can have a worldview of life, that can see the world differently than the previous generation saw the world. That sometimes a generation can get so stuck in the worldview that it's in there, there's no way for it to get out. But the next generation can come and produce a new worldview that the previous generation simply didn't have. And there's a limitation to what any generation can see. You know, on the one hand, every generation says about the previous generation, they're so egotistical, they're so stuck in their own ways, they're so much lower than we are. They've missed the point. They don't appreciate the same things anymore. And on one hand, that's true. And every generation we have Yiridat HaDorot. Every single generation, there's Yiridat HaDorot. Mazel Yirid, what does it mean to Mazel Yiridat HaDorot? We get lower, we get smaller. There's Yiridat HaDorot. And that's true. And while we do get lower, and we do get smaller, we are nothing compared to the generations that came before. You know, you take a child, a young child, that's smaller, it's younger. Shorter, straight up, shorter. An adult has a certain perspective, literally speaking. An adult has a certain perspective. They can see a certain length, they can see a certain distance, they can see to a certain part in the horizon. Can the child see as far as the parent can see? What happens if the parent then takes the child and puts the child on his or her shoulders? They could see further. They could see farther into the distance. They could see new horizons. Which emphasizes both sides of that equation. That each generation produces this new worldview, and that's very dangerous in and of itself. If a generation disconnects itself from what came before, there's only Yiridat HaDorot. There's only being shorter, smaller, more limited, more egocentric. And that's true of a lot of each new generation. But on the flip side, if that child generation, if that next generation recognizes its source, if that next generation goes and puts itself on the shoulders of the previous generation and takes all of the positive lessons that can be taken from that generation, but takes it further, they can build new horizons if they sit on those shoulders. We have a word for that. It's called Mesorah. If we link into the Mesorah of the previous generation and recognize the godless of the previous generation, but allow ourselves to rise up with our new perspectives, then we're able to move forward. Then we're able to bring something new to the world, a new worldview, a new perspective. And perhaps one, hopefully one, that on that level is a little bit more fixed, a little bit more mitukan than the previous generation. And that takes a lot of work to sift out what to leave behind. Because a lot of times the things that we want to leave behind are things that we want to leave behind but shouldn't be left behind. But on the other hand, we need to see farther. We need to look at those horizons that our parents and our grandparents, that the previous generation simply couldn't see. Because at a certain point, a generation is stuck in its way of being. It's stuck in its way of seeing. There's a powerful Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Daf Hamad Aleph. And the Gemara says that if Klal Yisrael hadn't sinned at Chet HaMeraglim, that we wouldn't be here. And the Gemara then goes back and forth saying, like, what's your implication? That if we wouldn't have sinned at Chet HaEgel, if we wouldn't have sinned at Chet HaEgel, then they wouldn't have had kids? Of course they would have still had kids, and we would have been here. And there's a lot of back and forth to prove that, yes, they still would have had kids, and we still would have been here. The Gemara concludes, okay, fine, we would have been here. But had Bnei Yisrael not sinned at Chet HaEgel, and they would have brought a full tikkun to the world, even if we were here, ke'ilu, it's like we weren't here. Why ke'ilu like we weren't here? Rashi on the spot jumps and says, why is it like we wouldn't have been here? Because Chet HaEgel, you go back 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 years. How old are we in this room? Oh, let's go cumulatively. All of us, somewhere between 17 and 35. It's good, I gave myself a little bit of room to wiggle there also, right? 17 to 35. And it's like, hey, you who have been here for the last 2,500 years, I have a new idea. And they look at you and go like, no. What could we possibly have produced in a reality where people would have lived for that long? There's nothing. We can't possibly come to combat that. We can't come and actually rise up and be our own people. We can't sit on their shoulders if they keep going up. But they also can't break out of their limited perspective if we don't rise up. So it's ke'ilu, says the Gemara, like we would have never been born, would have been totally insignificant. The fact that they do sin at Chet HaEgel, the fact that generations do come and go, that there is a shift of generations, that's what allows each generation to come and produce its new perspective for all of its failures when it's not used properly, but for all of its potential to bring forth new life, new perspective, a new way of seeing things, a new way of experiencing things. And I suspect that's even hinted to in the psukim themselves. When I saw it in the psukim, I was like, for sure that's what it is. And a lot of the mafarshim get involved in technical halachic discussions, but at the end of the Ramban, he says what I thought was just so clearly screaming out from the psukim. If you open up even to the beginning of Paraduma, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe ve'al Aron lemor, zot chukat haTorah asher tziva Hashem lemor, daber al bnei Yisrael v'yikhu eilecha para aduma tima asher ein bamum asher lo ala aleha ol. Go and take a para aduma unitatem ota el Elazar haKohen, and go and give it to Elazar haKohen. And immediately then I stopped. What's wrong with that sentence? Aaron, give it to Aaron haKohen. When have we ever talked about Elazar? Where did Elazar come from? Where did Elazar come from? We talk about him like, yeah, so I guess, you know, we talk about the leftover sons of Aaron, who the Kanaviyo died and they didn't die, and who's going to take them out of the tent. We mention him here and there, but suddenly Parah Adumah, we now put him front and center, so there are halachic ramifications to this pasuk, to be sure. And a lot of the Rishonim link into that. But what is this telling us? What's being hinted to here in the psukim that the Ramban picks up on? That inherent in the nature of Para Aduma is this recognition that there needs to be a transition in generations. Of the significance of the next generation rising up. That from the death of one generation comes the life of another generation. And so it's Elazar HaKohen who's emphasized in this paragraph, and it's even foreshadowing the fact that he is going to become the centerpiece of Kihuna for the rest of the Torah from this point forward, after a few paragraphs later when Aaron dies. But he's put front and center here within the context of Parah Aduma, because it's all about looking towards the next generation. And I think also that if you have the death of a generation, something that I've thought about and I suspect it to be true, Parah Aduma is being about being matar from Tumat Meit. What is often emphasized in terms of Zot Chukat HaTorah? What's the whole thing is the Chuk because the whole thing seems totally out there. But what in particular, of all parts of Parah Aduma, is the wildest thing about Parah Aduma that's focused on is the Chuk of Parah Aduma?
Why is it done with
the whole thing is strange, but there's actually one aspect of it which is totally counter-logical, totally illogical. Anybody familiar?
Ashes.
Good. The whole procedure is, I'm still with you. The whole procedure is,
there's always going to be someone who's tummy.
Not just someone who's tummy. Say it a little bit more fine-tuned. Yes. Meaning, the one who purifies the ones who are tame, what happens to that person? They become tame. By being metahir somebody else, I become tame. How could creating Tahara make me Tamei? And many link it to the fact that, while yes, you are all right, and there is a lot of ink that's been poured to explain all of the wild aspects of Parah Aduma. That's all true. But the wildest thing is, say the Mefarshim, well, why does the person who's being Matara become Tamei? There seems to be an inherent implication here. That if you want to create a reality of Tahara, you may end up being sunken into that Tuman itself. It's a sacrifice that you have to make. It's not some that these individuals die in this Parsha. Who died behind the scenes of this Parsha? Who died in the white spaces between the Parsha? The entire generation. Who embodies that generation? Who embodies any generation? The leaders of that generation. And so I suspect that the two are linked hand in hand. That counterintuitively, there needs to be even the fall of the leaders to allow for the rise of the next. Even if they're pure, even if they're purifying, that retroactively, they're sunken into the realities of their generation. And Miriam dies, and Aaron dies, and Moshe gets Gezirat Mitah because that generation has gone, and those who are Mitaher become Tameh. We'll talk about that even more when we talk about the Chet of Mimariva next time as Rav Hashem. And so we have the rise of this new generation. Let's take this as the last thread to kind of flow through. And they'll tie a lot more of this parsha together. What we then see over the course of this story is that transition. Is the falling away of the previous generation and its leaders, but also the rise of a new generation. What happens at Mimariva? What actually happens at Mimariva? This is a well-known story, and it's in front of you. What happens at Mimariva? We complain about what? About water. Has anybody done that before?
Yeah.
Who? Bnei Yisrael! The whole previous generation did, but which generation has complained about water before? The Yotzei Mitzrayim, not the Ba'ei Ha'aretz. And if you look at the psukim, does God get angry in the context of these psukim? God doesn't react at all. Who's the only one to react in this story? Moshe. Because who is he reacting to? He's reacting to the previous generation, I suspect. This is all B'derech HaAfshar, but I think it's clear in the psukim. God doesn't react. God's like, yeah, welcome to a new generation. To a certain extent, we do have to reinvent the wheel. We got to go through this, complaining about water, getting through it, rocks, water, we'll deal with it. But, says God, they're a totally new generation, and therefore, well, with the previous generation, I told you to hit the rock, somehow, without getting into the details of it here, because we definitely don't have time, without getting into the details of it here, somehow the previous generation required hitting the rock. This is a whole new generation. And so God says, for them, I need them to experience speaking to the rock. But Moshe gets so angry because they're still complaining. But are they still complaining? No, they've never complained before. It's a new generation. And not only that, what does he do? He hits the rock. He relates to them. In whatever way hitting the rock relates to the first generation. And whatever way speaking to the rock relates to the second generation. He's still relating to them like the previous generation. God doesn't get angry. Moshe does. Because God knows this is part of the process. And then we go forward. Still skipping at him. We're going to link that in at the very end. The death of Aaron, the Nachash Nechoshet. So what do we do again? Not unlike us. We're very consistent. We complain about not just water now. Like, we have to up the ante a little bit. What do we complain about? Food and water. And the whole thing. The whole nine yards. But something incredible happens in this story that you will not find anywhere in Shmot, Vayikra, or Midbar. Take a look at this pasuk. Something we've never, ever seen before. Perek Chaf Aleph Pasuk Zayin. Vayavo Ha'am El Moshe, the nation comes to Moshe, Vayamru, and they say, Chatanu. What does Chatanu mean? We sinned. Find me one place in any sin, in all of Bamidbar, in all of Shmot. Find me one place where Bnei Israel are like, I get it. We made a mistake. Not only do I get it, but I'm admitting to it. Not only am I admitting to it, but going forward, Ki dibarnu b'Hashem v'vach, we've spoken against God and you. Tikkun for both Shlach and Korach right there. I get that we made a mistake. Not only that, Hitpalel al Hashem, but I know that God is the one who can save us. So please, Moshe. Moshe's not doing it on his own now behind the scenes. They're coming and saying to Moshe, we know how this goes. You're the only one who can save us. Please, go and daven on our behalf to God. Vayasar me'alinu et hanachash, vayitpalel Moshe be'ad ha'am. That's a mind-shattering pasuk after what we went through in Shmot, Vayikra, and Midbar. Never seen anything like that. Whole new generation, whole new perspective of people who are going to have to make those mistakes, but have learned from the previous generation about how to live through those mistakes, about how to come out of the other side. Having watched a generation that went into Eretz Yisrael and said, we can't go in. Why can't we go into Eretz Yisrael? What's in our way? What's in our way? Why can't we go into Eretz Yisrael? Parshat Shlach. Why were they afraid to go in on the Pshat of Pesukim? Meraglim told them what was there that they were afraid of. The nations. They're huge. They're what? Giants. What happens next? Sikon and Og. We come and we walk face to face to war with giants. And this new generation, when God says, don't worry, go and fight because I'm telling you you're going to win. They pick up their weapons and they go to war and they fearlessly battle and they overcome. This whole story is about the transition from one generation to the next of being Metayer from Tumat Meit and bringing about new life. A new generation of life with a whole new perspective. The whole new perspective. Last piece, because we're out of time. We actually did pretty good. So far we've got 6 out of 7. What's missing? I'll tell you what I suspect. And I strongly, strongly suspect this to be the case. It's so interesting to me, and I spent a lot of time thinking about this over the summer when we were in Parshat Chukat. Everything here fits in. The second after Mei Meriva, we try to go through Edom, and we're told no, and then we go another way. Why is that there? Right after Moshe, the decree on the death of Moshe and Aaron? And we talked about this before. What would have happened had Moshe and Aaron led the people into Eretz Yisrael? And we'll talk about it more next week. Sorry, no, on Wednesday. We'll talk about it more on Wednesday. What would have happened had Moshe and Aaron, and Moshe in particular, gone into Eretz Yisrael? gone in, conquered the land, built the Beit HaMikdash, Tikkun HaGamor. End of history. End of history. But that's not going to happen. What does Edom represent? Who is Edom the child of? What nation is he born from? Esav, Seir. Even the Parker doesn't like Esav. Esav, or Seir. There's a recognition that while tremendous things are going to happen throughout the rest of this parsha, the rise of Elazar, the Nachash Nechoshet, the ability to recognize our sin, the ability to fight wars when God tells us to fight wars, first thing is we need to recognize that even though we've gained a new perspective, and even though the next generation will rise to a place of life, something was still lost. There's Tahara, but there's also Tuma. There's life, but there's also death. And yes, you, the new generation, will be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. But you won't be able to do what the other generation could have accomplished had it risen to its task. The other generation, had it risen up, had it succeeded, they could have reached the Tikkun HaGamor. They could have reached Va'alu Moshim Bahar Tzion Lishpot Et Har Esav Va'aya Hashem Amlucha. They could have ended history and wiped out Esav, wiped out Edom, wiped out Seir. The first thing we need to emphasize is you've lost. We lost something very, very big and very significant at that moment. We lost something when we lost Moshe and Aaron in that previous generation. There's no longer going to be a conquest of Edom. There's no longer a conquest of Esav. There's no longer a world of Tikkun HaGamor, of Alu Moshim Bahar Tzion Lishpot Et Har Esav Va'Yital Hashem Amlucha. It's not going to happen. That's not going to be your generation. Because of that, you'll be able, because you're a new generation, you'll be able to enter Eretz Yisrael. But that's no longer an option. And the first thing that it does is emphasizes what we lost, what we sacrificed, what we gave up once Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam are gone and that whole generation is gone. And those are the two sides of that coin. We lose something, the greatness of the previous generation, the more pure perspective that our parents and grandparents and great-grandparents and their parents and their parents and their parents had. We lose a lot in Yiridat HaDorot because at the end of the day, we're smaller. At the end of the day, we're not as great. And once we've accepted that reality and are very clear on the fact that we never leave the past behind, and clear on the fact that we lose out on that generation, then we can build toward what's going to come forward in the new generation, the new perspective that the generation can produce. Bezrat Hashem, we should be able to recognize the greatness of the generation and generations that came before us. Very locally, to appreciate our parents and appreciate our grandparents, and if we have them, to appreciate our great-grandparents. What they've given us, what they've produced, that their antiquated perspectives may be the pure perspectives that our new perspectives just don't align with. To make sure to purify ourselves to understand that if we don't see things like the previous generations did, it's not necessarily a good thing, and most of the time it's a bad thing. But on the flip side, should we mine from the previous generations the gold that's there, the Mesorah that's there, the Emet that's there, the purity that's there? We can take that central piece of life and bring it forward to create new life, a deeper perspective, a greater horizon, and give rise, hopefully, to a new generation that through combining the lessons of the past and the perspectives of the future to build toward a Tikkun HaGamor, Bezrat Hashem. Yeah.